Okay, so this was a trend analysis on HIV and pregnancy between 1998 and 2007, which was conducted in the state of Florida by the University of South Florida. And I have no relationships to disclose. So to begin, in 2006, women accounted for 26% of all HIV/AIDS cases, with a prevalence rate of 12.6 cases per 100,000 women in the 34 states with confidential name-based HIV/AIDS reporting. And the majority of these cases are among racial and ethnic minorities of childbearing age, particularly blacks and Hispanics. Based on data collected within these states with confidential name-based reporting, the prevalence rate of HIV/AIDS was 23 times as high in black women and 6 times as high in Hispanic Latino women as compared to white women. Between 2000 and 2003, over 50% of all births to women with HIV/AIDS were among women between the ages of 25 and 34. And specifically among pregnant women, heterosexual contact is the most prevalent mode of known HIV/AIDS transmission. In Florida, we have a confidential name-based HIV reporting system for all births, for all cases of HIV diagnosed after July 1997. And HIV testing laws in Florida require counseling for pregnant women about HIV testing and when women choose not to have the HIV test, written objection is required. HIV testing is a required component of routine prenatal care with an opt-out option. So overall, this analysis was looking at trends in HIV/AIDS among pregnant women in the state of Florida across socio-demographic subpopulations and individual risk factors between 1998 and 2007. For this analysis, we used the de-identified version of the Florida Linked Hospital Discharge and Birth Certificate data file for 1998 and 2007. Hospital inpatient discharge data were obtained from the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration, covering the study period, and were linked to Florida vital records for the same time period. And more detailed information on this data linkage process will be presented on Wednesday in the session entitled Statistical Applications Involving Public Health Databases and Data Mining, session 5191. So I won't go into detail here. But the hospital inpatient discharge data included diagnoses for HIV/AIDS, hepatitis B and C, and drug and alcohol and tobacco abuse, while the vital statistics provided maternal socio-demographic information, including age, educational level, race, ethnicity, and marital status. Overall, the data set contained 1.7 million records identified as singleton live births, and of course we received IRB approval before initiation. So annual HIV/AIDS prevalence rates among pregnant women was calculated by dividing the number of HIV/AIDS cases by the total number of singleton live births for that year and multiplying by 100,000 to establish prevalence rates per 100,000 live births. And the same approach was applied to derive group-specific prevalence rates. To examine trends, we used chi-square for trends, and we also computed rate ratios by averaging rates of HIV/AIDS during pregnancy across the study period across different groups. Because some women experienced more than one birth during the study period, we corrected for intracluster correlation using the generalized estimating equation. And the model adjusted for race, ethnicity, maternal age, marital status, education, alcohol, drug, or tobacco use, and the year of delivery. And the variables included in the model were based on a review of the literature. The GenMod procedure in SAS was used to conduct the analysis, and all tests of hypothesis were two-tailed and had a type 1 error rate of 5%. So over the study period of January 1, 1998 through December 31st, 2007, 4,732 pregnant women with HIV/AIDS were documented, with an average of 473 prevalent cases annually. Over the study period, the prevalence rate of HIV/AIDS during pregnancy dropped by about 15%. The rate of HIV/AIDS in pregnancy peaked in 2000 and subsequently declined annually at an average rate of 2.2%, reaching its lowest level in 2007 at the end of the study period. So this table presents our results by the socio-demographic variables included in the study. It shows the prevalence rate per 100,000 live births and also the adjusted rate ratios. And just to highlight each line, mothers aged 20 to 29 years and 30 years or older were significantly more likely to experience HIV and AIDS, HIV/AIDS in pregnancy, as compared to those less than 20 years of age. Analysis stratified by race, ethnicity, showed that Black mothers were 11 times more likely to have HIV/AIDS, and Hispanic mothers were twice as likely to have HIV/AIDS as compared to white mothers. Unmarried mothers, who represent only 39.5% of the total study population, had more than 3/4 of the cases. And mothers with lower educational levels had nearly 3 times the prevalence rate of HIV/AIDS during pregnancy. Women with hepatitis B had had almost 7 times more prevalence of HIV/AIDS as compared to those without hepatitis B, and women with hepatitis C had a prevalence rate of nearly 13 times higher than those without hepatitis C. And alcohol, drug, and tobacco use were all associated with HIV rates 2-fold higher than those of non-abusers. Okay, so this figure shows HIV rates in pregnancy in Florida from 1998 to 2007, the study period, by race, ethnicity. And you can see the huge disparity experienced by Black women regarding HIV in pregnancy. So the purple line is Black women, blue is all pregnancies, white women are shown by the red line, and then Latinas, Hispanics are shown by the green line. And it's noteworthy to highlight that Hispanic women were the only racial ethnic group that had an increasing trend in HIV/AIDS cases over the decade. The prevalence of HIV/AIDS during pregnancy decreased by 19% among Black women, even though they did have the highest prevalence rate overall. But the trend among Hispanic women increased by 89% over the study period. This figure shows maternal age at delivery, and the HIV rates in pregnancy based on maternal age at delivery. And overall, there are decreasing rates by age group, but the blue line is for women less than 20. That group showed the greatest decrease in prevalence rate. So overall, our finding of decreasing prevalence rate and trend of HIV/AIDS among pregnant women is in agreement with the reported overall decrease in HIV/AIDS rates in Florida from 1998 to 2007. Despite similar trends, the average prevalence rate of HIV/AIDS during pregnancy in Florida is 8 times as high as in the general population of the state, evidence that the burden of HIV/AIDS disproportionately affects pregnant women. Our study observed an alarming adjusted rate ratio of HIV/AIDS in pregnancy among Black women, a figure that was more than 10 times as high as that of white women. Previous investigators have attributed high rates of HIV/AIDS in Black women to lower marriage rates in the Black community, as well as higher rates of concurrent relationships. However, in our study, even after adjustment for marital status, the high-risk status of Black mothers remained unchanged, a finding that suggests that other risk factors play an important role in the persistently high rates of HIV/AIDS among Black women. we also observed a twofold elevation in the prevalence rate of HIV/AIDS in Hispanic mothers as compared to white mothers. And as I stated earlier, Hispanic mothers were the only racial ethnic group to demonstrate an increasing trend in HIV/AIDS prevalence over the decade. This observed increase in HIV/AIDS prevalence among Hispanic mothers could be partially attributed to recent changes affecting the collection of vital records data in the state of Florida, which included a modification in how race ethnicity was recorded on birth certificates beginning in 2004. And the greatest decrease was among teen mothers less than 20 years of age. And there are several possibilities for this decrease. The implementation of obligatory HIV/AIDS screening procedures for blood products in 1985 may have consequently affected children. All children who might have been infected through contaminated blood products are now over the age of 20 and would not be contributors to the current estimates of HIV/AIDS in teenagers. In 1994, the U.S. Public Health Service recommended the use of antiretroviral drugs to reduce perinatal transmission of HIV, which reduced vertically transmitted HIV/AIDS by approximately 80%. Additionally, improved HIV/AIDS prevention messaging, which supports increased knowledge and awareness, has also led to more frequent condom use in teenagers, which could contribute to a likely decrease in both HIV/AIDS and pregnancy rates among adolescent populations. There are some limitations of note within this study. The independent association between alcohol, drug, and tobacco abuse and HIV/AIDS might have been overestimated, since the exposure of interest, alcohol, drug, or tobacco use, had to be sufficiently pronounced to be diagnosed as a case of abuse. Another limitation is that the timing of HIV/AIDS diagnosis is unknown. Therefore, we are unable to assess if the women knew of HIV/AIDS status before being pregnant. Additionally, the requirement of prenatal screening may introduce reporting bias, which could account for the higher observed rates of HIV/AIDS, hepatitis B and C, among pregnant women as compared to the general population. Lastly, the racial ethnic differences in HIV/AIDS among pregnant women were quite evident in this study. However, the determination of plausible explanations for this disparity were limited due to the lack of information on social determinants, and such factors have been found to play an important role in the increasing rates of HIV/AIDS among women worldwide. Overall, the prevalence rate of HIV/AIDS in pregnancy has decreased over the study period over the previous decade, which is a promising sign. However, the fact that Hispanic and Black mothers still have substantially higher rates of HIV/AIDS in pregnancy is worrisome and represents a call for intensified HIV/AIDS prevention and education programs, as well as improved access to health care, especially among racial ethnic minorities. Future analyses among pregnant women that utilize social epidemiological approaches, which examine the distribution of health outcomes and their social determinants, may be beneficial in identifying systems that influence patterns of HIV/AIDS prevalence. Ultimately, these comprehensive strategies will aid in the design of effective interventions that will work within multiple levels of society. And in closing, I'd like to acknowledge the Florida Department of Health, as well as the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration, for providing the data files that were used in this study. For more details about this study, you can refer to our article on the study, which was recently published in JAIDS. Thank you.
Correlation was with alcohol, tobacco, and substance use. was it current or was it like over a lifetime? And what's the correlation between those two?
With alcohol, tobacco, and drug use?
Right.
Okay, so alcohol and tobacco and drug use was obtained through the hospital discharge records. And so that was one of our limitations, that it's based on what was diagnosed at the time in the hospital. So it could have been because of behavioral observations from the clinical staff and then further diagnosis or recommendation from the staff. So there are limitations with how alcohol, tobacco, and drug use were identified in this study. It's not over a lifetime. And what was the other thing about hepatitis B and C?
I'm just wondering, because of the correlation between, you know, substance use and hepatitis, how maybe possibly the hepatitis relationship is overstated as well.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't really look at the interaction or correlation between hepatitis B or C and substance use. So that's something that we could look at further, certainly within this data set. Okay, it was based on the tests that were conducted within prenatal care and testing when they entered the hospital. Depending on if they had prenatal care, all women, when they come in, even if they've had no prenatal care, still have to undergo STI testing and HIV/AIDS testing. So it's based on the testing at that time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's just stay for a minute because we have 2 minutes left. And so this is our time we can ask the speaker some additional questions. And I want to kick off the final session. I'm going to ask Toya a question. And I think that you had a very provocative talk related to the parental contact with law enforcement in San Bernardino County and death of infants from SIDS. And you found an increased risk of SIDS, particularly among parents where one or both had had a history violent crimes. And you cautioned us not to jump immediately to the conclusion that these people are killing their children. And obviously that's important for us to keep in mind. And I know that it's a delicate matter for you to start hypothesizing what you really think is going on, because you obviously need further study. But what I'd like to ask you to do is, could you give us a couple of hypotheses that you think would be top on your list to test in future studies. And in that way, you're not making any implications or suggestions, but you're saying these are our next research steps. So give us one or two hypotheses that you think would be the next logical steps to take to learn more about this topic.
Okay.
Are you going to fund Danny?
The money decides where the research goes, unfortunately. Well, in terms of the questions that I kind of brainstormed while I was doing the study, because I've stopped, this is an old study that we're reporting. I wanted to go more into details. Like if there had been resources, I would have preferred a non-concurrent cohort study to be done. In other words, follow each family. See, this is a compound issue. It's not just one thing. If someone is arrested for a violent crime, that's a big flag of other stressors in their lives. And you're not sure which stressor you deal with that fixes it most, if not everything. So it's more of finding people meeting people where they're at, and before they become parents, it's better to catch them either at school or in their communities to let them have information about personal health. Because really, it's what's showing in the children is the health of the parent.
Okay, but so, give us a mechanism. If they're not killing their children, then what do you think is going on? You think the person is so anxious or depressed? Maybe that's the case, but how is that contributing to SIDS? Is it they're not watching the sleeping position of the infant, or what would be a mechanism?
Because we're not sure where it's coming, which area it's coming in. It's tough for me to say it's this or that. However, I will say, are you aware of the non-natural causes? Have you heard of that? Unnatural causes? Have you watched that series?
Seven films called Unnatural Causes, about social injustice. So what about that?
Well, that is kind of like something that I strongly believe that's kind of what's going on here. It may not be genetic, it may be social, but it may even be genetic, who knows. But there is an interplay of different factors going on here. And if we want to solve it in the children, we have to start with the parents, because they are the ones that are allowing it to continue, as it were.
What made you look to link these data sets in the first place? Somebody had an idea of what they might find.
And he is not here today. It's Dr. Thomas Prendergast. He's one of the authors. He was the medical officer for San Bernardino County, and he is obviously a medical doctor, and he's also a public health professional. He has an MPH. So, well, you may not know this. I didn't go into all that, but San Bernardino County is the largest county in the U.S. LA always tries to take that from us. We are from the same state. LA is the largest in terms of population. We are the largest in terms of mass, in terms of land mass. See, they can't take that from us. Anyway, the other piece with San Bernardino County is that that's where you have the highest rate of methamphetamine in the U.S. In our county, they make drugs, they use it, and all that. So things like that make a health officer wonder what's going on here. And being an epidemiologist with that mindset, he gets in touch with the sheriff's department. I'm just like, you know, fishing. I just wonder. And from wondering, we went into research. And then one thing led to another. Like I said, it was in 1990 data, just 1 year, that made us go back to the IRB. And then we actually have permission for 1991 to 2000. But the birth cohort file for 1998, something happened to it. So we stopped at 1997 and then.
Thank you so much. We didn't want to put you on the spot, but it was very provocative. Well, let's move to the other speakers. Comments or questions that you'd like to ask any of the other speakers before we go around? No. Well, would any of the other speakers like to